Thank you very much for being here. It's great to have such a crowded full room today. My name is Kai. I'm the founder and the project lead of OpenHub. And before I start, just first question, who of you has already heard about OpenHub? Wow, that's great. How many of you are using it at home? Okay, also quite some. Wonderful. So for the rest, I'll try to give you some good reasons why you might want to have a look at it, at least if you're interested in somehow digitalizing your home by having smart devices and so on. Because at the moment, if you look at the landscape, if you go to shops and buy some smart devices, you end up with something like that. You have a couple of different devices, all come with their own smartphone app usually, which is used to control them and to get some data from them. And it works all nicely, all by itself, but you have more or less many silo applications in the end. And it doesn't really integrate into a smart home one solution. If you look a bit closer, in order to operate this smartphone app, all of these devices actually usually connect to some cloud service of their respective manufacturer. They send all your data there and punch a hole more or less in your network. And that's more or less how that setup looks like. Now, all of that is still integrated, but the industry now says, well, it's pretty easy actually. You have these many cloud services. We all know web technologies, REST APIs, and so on. So it's pretty easy to actually build a smart home solution, a single one, on that cloud level. So you introduce some common cloud service that actually reaches out to all the others, and you can come to an interaction between all your devices. And we see actually on the market many of such solutions. It started with something like Works with Nest. You can think also of Amazon Alexa being on that level to actually do a seamless integration. Google Home as well, things like Conrad Connect and many others are trying to do it that way. While that's very natural from service perspective, for the end user, it actually is a disaster, the outcome. I usually like to call this slide my rainy day slide, because it really somehow makes me sad to see it that it ends up that way. Because as an end user, all your data is actually pushed out there, you rely on all these different services. And there's this nice t-shirt available from the Free Software Foundation. There is no cloud, just other people's computers, so you really have to bring trust to all of them, not just trust that they handle your data correctly and they don't lose it. You have to trust them that they keep the service running over the next decades, because that's how long you usually want to operate devices in your home. And also bring the trust that they don't change their business model, suddenly charge you or lose the interest in the service and so on. So we've seen that in practice many times in the news as well, that if you have some issues, your DSL connection is broken and you don't have an internet, it's not really fun to operate a smart home with that topology anymore. And what's more, many of the manufacturers which are good in producing hardware, they might not really be the experts in actually doing secure cloud services, right? So somebody who builds toys might not be really have the skills to secure their web service with all the data that is pushed to that. And we've also seen already situations where the internet itself wasn't really properly working for a time. And if you have such basic functionality in your home, like switching a light, and that only works if all that is available, that really doesn't make much sense. So for me, there is a big difference between a connected home and a smart home. And That's why for me, in the smart home domain, in the smart home context, people talk about IoT, and IoT spells out for me as the intranet of things. Because my smart home devices, they are locally in my intranet, in my local network, and I want them to keep my data locally, and I want them to do local interaction and communication only. And as a user, I want to decide which data leaves my home and whom I trust to actually remotely access that. And, well, this kind of setup is really what OpenHub as a project is about, to build a single central point as a gateway in the home that allows the communication between different kinds of protocols, radio protocols, frequencies, and so on, and to allow overarching use cases there. So I didn't mention it's an open source project. Well, that's why we are here at FrostCon. It's implemented the core runtime in Java under the Eclipse public license. It is all around smart homes. I call it a systems of system approach because we really focus on integrating stuff that exists on your network and not so much doing initial provisioning and direct setup of the end devices themselves. So it's rather you have a Philips Hue system as a lighting system, for example, you set that up with the Hue system, and if that is discovered in your network, you can integrate it into your overall system of OpenHub. And this integration then in the end allows you to have single user interfaces on top of all of that. And what is actually more important in the daily use than user interfaces, it's the overarching automation. So you can really define rules and what happens completely independent of any vendor specifics, any protocol specifics, and so on. Just some statistics about the community. So we have many different side projects here and there. We have roughly 30 different projects on GitHub with a couple of hundred contributors, active contributors to the project. Quite some turnaround with the pull requests that keep me busy day and night. I actually have no real clue about the number of users or installations out there because we don't track the users at all. We have no clue how many people have it out there. But rough estimation is that it should be far beyond 100,000 users and installations. What we see is that we have roughly 1,000 downloads every day of the software. So that amounts to quite some numbers. And last but not least, there's really a very active community behind it, running on the forum with many questions and answers. And there are no silly questions. Every question from newbies is really answered in a very nice way. And I'm pretty proud of that community that has built around the project because it's a very nice way of collaborating there. So, talking about the different parts, the main part of OpenHub is really what you run on the gateway, like a Raspberry Pi. We call that the gateway runtime. And we have different kind of packaging for that. So you can get that from apt repository, RPM, we have Docker images, also applications for NAS systems like Synology and so on. The basic installation is really just a zip or tar GZ file that you can unpack, launch a start file, and that's it. So all that is required is really a system that runs a Java virtual machine. So it can be Linux, Windows, Mac, whatever, where you run that. Besides that, we have the projects for native applications, for Android, iOS, also a Windows native client, which then connect to that, and some optional component for the stuff where you need something running in the cloud. It's a Node.js-based server that we are actually also hosting for people, which allows to push your notifications to the native applications directly and also to securely access your local instance from remotely. So that's something that people can use as a nice feature, but they obviously don't have to. If you're building up a VPN to your local network, you can always use that for remote access, of course, or DNS services or others. What the cloud component additionally does is it hosts our Alexa skill and Google Home and IFT, so if this, then that integration. So everybody who wants to integrate on the cloud level with these services, that's also available here. Okay, some words to the internal architecture. So in the core, the basic idea of OpenHub is really to have a publish-subscribe mechanism, or a simple event bus, more or less, where the events are on abstract level, so not specific to any kind of protocol or anything, but rather saying, well, you're sending information, data, and abstract kinds of commands. Based on that, you build the user interfaces, you build the automation rules and everything. And then we have software modules, which you can think of device drivers. In OpenHub terms, they're called bindings. And they more or less are small modules that you can add to your system, which translate the abstract events into a specific protocol, into specific API calls for a certain device, and so on. And by this concept, it's really highly modular, so you can pick and choose actually the modules that you are interested in because you have the hardware and you want to integrate that, and you can simply leave out all the rest. Just as an example, what is available as such a binding or integration, it's really just a small subset of what the community has built there over the years. And you more or less find everything that is relevant on the market and that you get there. And if not, then people usually quickly implement such a binding. They contribute it back to the project. So we really see an increasing number of things here. And usually I'm the bottleneck because I try to keep the code clean. I'm doing really rigid reviews, code reviews on the stuff, so I have quite a long backlog of contributions to review here. On the concept level, it's important to understand that OpenHub differentiates between the physical layer, where we talk about the things, so really the devices that you hook up to the system, that you configure and want to use there. And they provide certain functionalities, features. And on the application level, functional level, we're then talking about simply items, which is a piece of information or something that you want to operate with. So as an example, you see here the door window contact. So this as a device is a contact, more or less. But on your application, you obviously want to say, well, it's your window that is open or closed. More explicit is it on something like a smart plug, which you can simply switch on and off. So the device is simply the plug that you have power or not. But in your user interface, in your automation, it's actually either maybe a light or a fan like here. So functional perspectives of something very different than the physical device that you hooked up. That's why we really do this separation, and we then link our functional items to the channels, the functionality of the things. And this allows you to really keep the things completely decoupled, and if you replace one technology by another one because you're don't have classic lights anymore with some actuator switch, but some Zigbee connected one. You really just have to hook up the new devices and you link that, but you don't have to change anything on your user interface definitions, on your automation rules and so on, because that's decoupled from each other. Sitemaps, just to mention them briefly, that's a declarative approach to actually define what you want to see on your user interface. So it's a small text file where you say, well, okay, that's more or less the content you want to have on the UI. These grouped on a page, that's then on a subpage with that kind of icon next to it. And you define that once, and this is then read and used by the different user interfaces, be it the HTML UIs, be it the native applications. So only define it once and have it then available across all the different devices and UIs. Just to show what kind of UIs exist, it starts from things like smartwatch, Pebble UI, different web versions, the native ones, also having a special HTML5 one for bigger tablets and screens where you can really define many very specific widgets, and having wall-mounted tablets for a nice view and visualization of your home. Some further features, just to mention that they exist. We have text-to-speech, many different implementations that you can choose what to use there, which is very useful for doing notifications in some way in your home. Audio syncs is the mean to actually bring such a audio stream then to some device. It can be an MP3 file, it can be the output of a text-to-speech engine. And so many devices like connected speakers or Kodi or a Chromecast receiver, they all can be used to actually then play the notification sounds that you have there. Next is data persistence. So all the events on the event bus, you naturally can persist to some database to have time series data, to build graphs on that, and statistics. Also here, OpenHub doesn't say it's that database and you use that, but you can really hook up more or less everything underneath that you like. And so here it's also very modular and extensible. Last but not least, third-party integration. I mentioned Alexa, Google Home, and stuff like that. We also have a Mycroft skill for more or less the privacy-aware voice assistant, which is a really nice project. HomeKit compatibility by exposing actually everything that you've connected to OpenHub as a HomeKit compatible device in your local network. So something like that is also possible here. On top of all of that, OpenHub exposes its functionality and everything that is connected through a REST API. So it's also easily integratable into other systems if you want to tinker around there. So Svega documentation directly available on the runtime. And additionally to the REST API, we also have server-send events, SSE, in order to push notifications out. So you can subscribe there and get updates directly to external systems. Of course, the last session in this room here was MQTT. So a word on that. It's also easily possible to have all these events directly pushed to MQTT or translated there and integrate devices. If you build your own Arduino stuff and so on and want to integrate that, that's also easily possible. Now, enough of the talking. I want to show you something in practice. And I've prepared here in this folder, should probably increase it a bit, the font size. In this folder, I simply extracted an OpenHub runtime. So you see there's not much, some folders, start scripts. So let's start that up. Okay. Have a look at the log file. Okay, already started. Started dashboard on local interface. All UIs available. So we can now simply access localhost 8080. And we're on the dashboard, which is simply more or less the starting point to reach the different UIs. Now, the main one that you should know about as a beginner for the setup is the paper UI, which is on the far right. The paper UI is our administration UI for doing, didn't I click? I clicked. For doing setup of your system through a user interface. So actually OpenHub provides two ways. One is completely text-based, one is through the paper UI. And yeah, for different users and different setups, different ways make sense here. For this demo, the graphical UI is a good starting point. So what did I bring with me? Let me show you first. I have a small Bluetooth beacon here, which is a sensor beacon that measures all kinds of values and sends them as data. So that's a good device to get some data into the system. In order to receive these Bluetooth telegrams, I have a small Bluetooth dongle here, which I now simply plug in to the USB port. That one is not auto-discovered on a Mac. On Linux it is, so I can simply add it manually. So I add a new device from the Bluetooth binding manually, and it's a Blue Giga Bluetooth dongle. We can choose now the port where it's connected, so we get directly the list that is available here, which should be that one. Okay, there it is. It says online, so it connected to it successfully, and we see on the lower right already that devices are coming in here. So that's actually now automatic discovery that this thing is scanning here in the room what is available, many Apple users apparently. And we also find our Blue Key smart beacon down here. So I can now simply say, well, this one I want to add, the rest I simply ignore. And now we've added that as a device to our system that it knows, okay, it wants to do something with that. We see the channels listed, so it gives its signal strength, RSSI indicator, battery temperature, humidity, pressure, and so on. And if we go to the control tab, it will take a moment because it just sends out these telegrams from time to time. RSSI had already received that it's there, and the rest should come flowing in now. Still enough battery on it, that's a good start. Okay, and there we have the other values. So that was the first device being integrated, pretty easy. Next one is here, this nice light bulb which I brought with me that hasn't been discovered because it's actually completely powered off. That's interesting, why did that turn off? Okay. Now it has power, and this is already pre-configured to hook up to my local Wi-Fi here. So that will now, that it has power, hook up to the network, and hopefully I should automatically find that. We can check. It's a LifeX bulb, so it's Wi-Fi enabled LED bulb. Look here, and there we go, it found the bulb. Again, we can say, let's add that. Just call it LifeX, and it has color temperature, signal strength, and if we go to control, we should now be able directly to control it. Wonderful. Either directly that or changing the color temperature, so we can have a cold white over to warm white. You can choose what kind of. Oh, that's a bit bright. Let's go here. Okay, that was next one. This one? Yeah. Wi-Fi, yeah. Okay, last one. Now we have some data, we have a device to control. Now we need some controller, and for that I brought this little thing here with me. Who knows what it is? What is it? Very good, yeah, and that's the right movement. It's a stereoscopic infrared camera that can recognize gestures that you do above it. So I can simply plug that in. It's called a Leap Motion controller. Leap Motion is. That uses VPA2, yes. You should have it in a network that OpenHAB can reach it. But yes, it can be on a different network than you usually use for other stuff. Yeah. So I plugged this one in, and many Bluetooth devices around here. There we go. We have a new inbox entry, the Leap Motion controller. Let's add that one. And this has a single channel which recognizes gestures, and I can now decide what to do with that one. I click here and say, well, I want to control some color. I have to select the channel which I want to control with that, and it's the color channel of the LifeX bulb. Okay, we link it and we should be there. Now let's have a try how that works. So I can simply now say, yeah, there, it's on, and I turn it off. Okay, so you have to imagine the button here, I'm pressing it, and you can turn it on and off. It's probably too bright light from the top. I can also simply hold my hand here with the five fingers, I can dim it, and it's really fun. I can do that for hours. And last but not least, we want to have a color control, of course. So how do you display colors usually? As a color circle, so let's simply circle here. And you see, we change the color this way or the other way around. It has some problems with the light here from above. Yeah, but there we go. Okay, so that's a nice control now directly for the lamp, and something very, very different from technology point of view, but easy to integrate. We can also do some very simple rules through this user interface. Like we can say, well, actually, I have my virtual doorbell here, so let's call a rule doorbell, and we say when a trigger channel fires, we have to choose the channel, which is our Leap Motion controller, and choose an event, which is simply the tap event gesture. Then we can do a couple of things, like playing a sound. And I have a dog barking, no, rather use the doorbell. On the standard sync, which should be simply the output of the local system. Okay, let's try if our doorbell works. Ah, nice. Small leg. Cool. And I can do that for hours as well. Okay. Pardon? How much? If I remember correctly, it was somewhere around $60. Yeah. So actually not too expensive. The sensor meant to mention, it really just the hardware is the stereoscopic camera, but the whole processing is done on your computer. So actually connecting that to something like a Raspberry Pi usually doesn't work, because that's simply too little computing power on that. Here on my MacBook, it works nicely. But it sends, I think, around up to 200 frames, so images per second, which you have to process and recognize the gestures.
You have to press, so you can see if there's somebody standing at the door, and maybe sitting around doing some weird stuff.
Yes, 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 yes. Okay. So, see the stuff coming in there. Okay, that was the stuff around here, but I also want to show you now the more expert mode, so what you can do on the textual side. And for that, we have a nice Visual Studio Code plugin for OpenHub, which supports you in textual configurations and things you can do there. Now, on the items, let's create a new file here. My items. Is that big enough to read? Yeah. Okay, wonderful. So we can now simply define a new item here, which we say is a switch. So simply just a Boolean value, which we call presence, and we give it a label, we are at home, for example. So this is now information that we simply say, well, we want to have this information, we want to work with that information in rules in our UIs without having attached any hardware to that right now. Now we can define some rules in here. Also my rules, a new file. So that works with templating here. So we can say we're leaving home is a rule. And we could now say that's actually something I have at home, that when I'm leaving home and I'm pressing a button that I'm now away, I'm actually turning all my lights off, right? Because I might have forgotten quite some of them. So we can simply now say here, if our live X color, you see all of that is directly read from the live system. That's what this Visual Code plugin does. It really connects through the REST API to the OpenHub instance and reads what is defined there. So it can directly check everything and offer you syntax completion. We want to get the state of that, get state as an on-off type. Usually the state of this thing is a color state, so use saturation brightness. We're now only interested whether it's on or off. And if this one is on, we want to do something. That is a kind of scripted Java language. So the question was, what kind of scripting language is it? It's a scripted Java language. It's an Eclipse project called XBase or Extend, which was more or less done by model-driven development from the Xtext project, really being more or less completely compatible to Java, but being parsed and interpreted at runtime and really nicely scripted. And all of that is then also integrated with the syntax checking and content completion through the language server protocol. If you might have heard about that one, so it's actually OpenHub Runtime serves as a language server, so it provides information what kind of commands are valid now, is the syntax correct, and so on. So you see that it highlights stuff here that it's not okay, and so on. So that's really a very nice integration here, because I started off with some projects that also had scripting in Perl language and so on, and I never actually got my scripts right and working, and I really wanted to have something doing syntax checks and stuff. So where was I? I checked whether it's on, and if I was so bad and forgot the stuff, I can simply say, "Hi Kai, you have left the light on." And of course we can, oops, this line. Of course, we can then directly send on the livex color item, we can send an off command. Okay, and if if we didn't forget it, we just say goodbye. Now I just have to figure out why it says, sorry. That's the good thing about the syntax checking here. That block should go to the then, of course, because the when was, we have to define our condition here. When the item presence, which we just defined, changed to a new state, which is off. So we're leaving home. I forgot that part first. So that's the when block, which is your triggering conditions. When should this rule be run? And now in the then block, this makes sense. Okay, let's quickly write a second rule for coming home. And the trigger would be very similar, item presence changed to on. Then we can now, for example, say, well, we have a light sensor here, and we can say, well, if it's dark at home, we want to turn on the light automatically. So let's go for the blue key information, which is the luminance at the moment, 20 lux, which is not much here. So if this state is bigger than 10. And the nice thing is we can also operate with units in here. So if you have some sensor that reports, I don't know, miles, and you want to calculate in kilometers, then you can simply say, well, okay, put a unit to it, and the rest will be done by the system automatically. So if it's lighter than that, then we get to the LiveX color and send an HSB, hue saturation brightness type, white as a color. Yeah, so the question is there hysteresis logic? You can simply implement it here. At the moment, the luminance is not a triggering factor. So if it changes, it simply won't cause the rule to run again. So at the moment, it will only now evaluate, okay, if it was lower or higher, and then it decides what to do. But of course, you can implement according logic that really makes sure that you don't have any flickering effects at home if you auto switch it. No, but there are some triggers. I don't know if they're readily available already, but the idea was to have triggers for rules where you can simply state such things already. Okay, if that changed and it went above that or below that, and yeah, you can do such stuff. Okay, and then in any case, we say, welcome back. So just to give you some glimpse of what you can do with the automation, or actually, I can do something more here. Welcome back, and it is, and we can take the some of our information, the temperature, for example, there, temperature state. So we can simply integrate that in a string here, and it will now tell us, hopefully, the temperature. I saved the stuff. We disable this rule for the moment, and now simply say that our deep motion controller doesn't control that anymore, but it should actually simply be a toggle switch and operate on our at-home presence item, which is now also here available. So you see how it's the graphical UI is nicely linked with the textual configuration. It doesn't matter where you define what, it's always available on the other side as well. Okay, 25 lux. We are not at home at the moment. Nothing happens at all. That's not much. A rule coming home, the names blah blah cannot be resolved. Okay, that's more or less already what you want to know. The coming home, this one cannot be resolved. Ah, I know, that's just a very little small bug that I just found out about when preparing this demo. By deactivating the leap motion from the color channel, it actually removed the item for the color channel. Just have to press here, now it's again available, the item, and the rule should nicely work. You will see. Okay, not at home.
Welcome back. It is 24.0 degrees Celsius.
Okay, that worked, and it was light. Yeah. The text-to-speech engine in this case is using Mac operating system built-in. For Raspberry Pi, we have the Pico TTS as a text-to-speech wizard, which is pretty good quality. And you can also use cloud-based text-to-speech services from Google, from Voice RSS. They are only used once for each text, and then it's cached locally. So it's an... Yes, so when you're using Google Text-to-Speech, it generates you a WAV file, which you download, and it's stored locally in a cache, and it's used from there if it's the same text again. Yeah, but I prefer the local variant, so I'm running it on a Mac at home, that's fine, but Pico TTS on a Raspberry Pi is also a pretty nice solution. So let's leave again. Come on, leaving! It's too bright here.
But hey Kai, you have left the light on.
And turned off. Great. And now I put the beacon in my pocket, but it didn't receive yet any updates as it seems. Ah, zero. You see, just right now it came with the update. So if we're returning back home, it should leave the light off this time. There we go. You know what? I can also simply press here.
Welcome back. It is 26.0 degrees Celsius.
Okay, and the light is still off. And with that, I'm actually at the end of the demo. I didn't show you many, many other interesting parts. I didn't show you anything about the sitemaps and the UIs, actually, that you use on a daily way. But as I mentioned initially, it's really the automation is the really important stuff on a daily usage in the end. UIs for charting and so on is pretty nice. You can do a lot of cool stuff. So if you're interested in that and want to see more, just visit us at the OpenHub booth, which we have outside. We can show you something. And with that, I'm at the end. And thank you for your attention. And I think we have a few minutes left for questions, and there would be the first one. I can hand you the mic.
So it would be interesting to know, for example, to do statistics, like you want to see how much electricity you're consuming while you're in Mallorca and your house is unattended. You want to see if your heating is running and things like that. Do you, is there some charting solution that you can see what happened to your house if somebody opened the door and things like that? That you get some history, like graphs and things like that? Like MRTG for your house.
Right. So what is already built in is the simplest solution is RD4J, so round robin database for Java directly built in, which renders you PNG images of your time series. That's one very simple solution. We have then another one, which is the hub panel, so the one for the bigger screens, the UI that I showed you, which does JavaScript, nice reports for such things. Also timelines, where you simply have just on-off information, like, OK, something was open or closed, or on or off. You can have that nicely reported. And for heavy users, they usually tend to simply put the stuff all into InfluxDB and use Grafana as an UI for having really charts and monitoring of their system at home.
Okay, so if you want to search into your freezer, if it's, for example, consuming more electricity than it should, maybe at the same temperature, a year later it used maybe 5% more electricity, and you could maybe want to remove the ice from the freezer or something because you see now it's a little bit icy because it takes more electricity or something.
Yeah, you can pretty easily usually see such stuff on the chart. So I'm actually also monitoring my energy consumption, and I often already noticed if at night it's more than usual, okay, something must be abnormal, and I go around and wonder what it is. Yeah. So that can be helpful. Any other question? Oh, right here, please.
Sorry, I was late. So this is a very practical question. How I would go about making a UI for this thing on an old Android tablet or a phone, which we all have lying around, I expect. I want to have a screen where I would check what's going on with my house. Can I use an Android tablet or a phone for that? Do you have a UI which fits that well?
An Android tablet, you mean, or?
Yeah.
Yes, so the hub panel one is the ideal UI, I would say, for that, because you can adapt it to any screen size and have widgets defined exactly how you want it. For Android phones, we rather have a native app that more or less does a list rendering of your stuff and where you can easily browse, and which is okay for on the road. But for bigger tablets at the wall, it's an HTML5 application, this panel UI, so you can run it on an iPad, on Android tablet, on any kind.
Sounds great. One last question. you told us what is easy to integrate. Can you tell us what is hard to integrate right now?
You
listed the devices. It showed us the devices which are easy to integrate.
Which are hard to integrate.
Yeah.
Well, usually the devices where the manufacturers don't really care about open APIs and they try to close it as much as possible and just send their data to the cloud. These devices are really not fun, and it's nothing that I would suggest people to actually buy. And I hope that someday that will actually become a reason for manufacturers to consider open APIs and to really be open to developers. And yeah, there are many devices that are really, yeah, possibly able to connect to, but not documented at all. So you have to do a lot of reverse engineering and stuff. So yeah, I won't name any specific one, but there are definitely many cases for people who love reverse engineering.
So are there any devices which are open but are difficult to integrate because of architectural limitations or because nobody had time to do that? Any kinds of devices, perhaps?
Well, the trickiest things are usually whole protocol families like ZigBee, Z-Wave, and Ocean, and so all where you have more or less just a protocol defined, but hundreds of different devices out there which might behave according to the protocol. Some might have firmware bugs, and to handle all of that is usually quite tricky.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
I just opened the F-Droid tool to find the application, and it says here, anti-features. The app is flagged with the non-free asset flag because the open HAB icon is not under a free license. Why is it?
That's a very good question. It's mainly because I have too many contributions to review. I still have in my local file system actually a file where I want to specify the reuse of our logo. And I didn't yet finish that, and I'm not a lawyer, and that's something that you simply take a while. We didn't do any trademark on the logo so far. We might actually do a trademark on that, but we want it to be freely available and to be used, yeah. But you need to put that down in some legal terms and so on. You need a lawyer for that to get it right. And so that's something still on my to-do list. But it's not that we don't want the community to actually refer to OpenHub with that icon. Rather the contrary.
So as far as I understand it, you also have a server part in OpenHub?
A server part, you
optional,
mean a cloud part, or?
Yeah, like run a server that collects the data, or you just use other cloud-based services?
So you mean on the cloud side?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's this OpenHub Cloud project, which is a Node.js application with a MongoDB where stuff can be stored. That's something, yeah, that is mainly used for the integration with IFT or Alexa and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. But usually all the data is really on your local system, on your local hardware where you installed that, also the databases. Yeah.
So if I saw it right, if you want to push some information to your Android or iOS app, you need to use your cloud service. Or can I directly push a notification from my own OpenHub system to my iPhone?
As far as I know, it's not possible to have push notifications to native apps without having some server in the cloud. So that's why we are operating this My Open Hub instance to do that. But you're of course free to use other kind of push notification service to your smartphone. You can simply have push over or different other services which also allow you to push notifications to the smartphone, which don't directly end up in the Open Hub app, but which also end up on your screen.
Okay,
there was one question in the back. Could you hand the mic over there?
I've got some questions about best practice. If you have all the options you can have in a house, the question is, where would you do the switching? Would you do it in the fuse chambers, the right word? Sicherungskasten, was heißt das auf Englisch? Ich weiß es nicht. Fuse box, in the fuse box, or would you do this with in the room itself, or where would you do the switching part?
You mean real switches at the wall, or?
More actors. For light or for
actuators. Usually I say there's really no one recommendation that you could give for people or what to actually do, because it highly depends on your personal setups there. So whether you're creating a new house or completely refurbishing it, if you're somewhere where you actually cannot touch or change anything and you need to retrofit stuff, and also the kind of use cases that you want to do. So this might be around lighting, others might want to save energy and do that. So there are so many different things around on the market, it's difficult to give the one answer that fits everyone. I think we're already pretty much over time, so I would suggest I answer any further questions very happily, either right now here or at the booth then later on. So thank you very much again.